Okay.
Until this point, up until now, we studied the book of Shmuel on Shabbos. So some, many of you were with us on Shabbos, some of you were not. So I'm just going to bring you up to date, basically. We learned about the life of Shmuel and how he was, how he was born with his mother and never having children, etc., etc., and how he was born miraculously, how she was so thankful that he was born. Then we moved on to Shmuel's reign as a shofet and his success as a judge, and how he brought some sort of semblance of order. Now, if you recall, this all comes on the heels of the book of Shoftim. Book of Shoftim, which we did study together. Is anybody here for the Shoftim class? I think you were. The basic theme of Shoftim was all the leaders all had some kind of crazy problem. They were never able to put it all together. And they were never able to unite the Jewish people. It was always like this diverse, spread out, divisive group of people that could never agree on anything. Okay. So,
That wasn't their fault in some cases.
I mean, the leader's job is to unite, not to divide.
Deborah did a good job.
Everybody did a good job, but don't get me wrong, but Deborah, the woman, was never going to unite the Jewish people. She was never going to get them all together.
I'm saying, she never had the... When you say a man had to unite, I mean,
and
the woman...
And this guy was weak, and this guy, you know, his father was, his mother was a prostitute, and another guy was like a little crazy, you know, like... And Simson was very strong, but he really, you know, made crazy promises, and he kind of went after non-Jewish women. You know, everybody had a problem. So after that comes the book of Shoftim, where Shmuel really puts it all together. He's the first shofet that really puts it all together. Unfortunately, of course, his sons are... You may remember? What's the problem with his sons?
They're corrupt.
They are corrupt. Okay? So we went through that, and that was not good. That was a bad thing. So people finally get sick of it and they decide we want a king. The first king they pick is, well, they don't pick anybody. The first king that God picks is Shaul. If you recall, anybody remember what was the most distinctive thing about Shaul? He was a tall man, right? He was head and shoulders above the rest. Physically. Literally, he was head and shoulders above the rest and nothing else. And Shaul has some successes, immediate successes. And then we read about his greatest failure. His greatest failure is... with the nation of Amalek, right? He goes against God's will, and Shmuel says, this is very important because this is going to come back to him, haunt him many, many times. Look at chapter 14, one second. 14? Oh. I feel like, you know, I ever, at Cheers, when Norm would walk in, everybody would go, Norm! You should do that for Milt. Milt! Okay. Good. Not the police team. Where is it? Where is, I think chapter 14. Where is Amalek? 14, 15 maybe? Chapter 15? Yeah, 15. Okay. We're at chapter 15, verse 28. No, we have more than one.
Oh, that's fine. I'm sure.
You're good. Okay. Okay, verse 28. Chapter 15, verse 28. Okay, this is the verse that will haunt Shaul for the rest of his life. And actually, it creates a theme under which much of what we're going to study about Shaul lies. 15, verse 28. What page?
98.
Verse 27. So Shmuel comes to like scream at him, what are you doing? How did you do that? How could you abandon the word of God and not kill out all the Amalekim? Vayashev Shmuel alachet. Shmuel turned around to go. And he grabbed onto the edge of his coat and it tore. Okay, who grabbed onto whose coat?
Well, that to be Saul.
Saul grabbed onto Shmuel's coat. Some say that Shmuel grabbed onto his own coat and he tore it. Because very often, you saw this happening quite often, the Navi would very often, remember we talked about this, the Navi would sometimes use symbolism in order to make a point. To make an example of something, to show something. Vayomer elav Shmuel, Shmuel said to Shaul, Kara Hashem et mamluchut Yisrael me'alecha hayom. God has torn away your kingdom from you today. Unisana l're'acha hatov mineka. And has given it to your friend better than you. Okay? That's it. Shmuel, it's over. Your kingdom is gone. We're going to give it to somebody, to the person who's better than you. Okay, so now you're Shaul. And there's this prophecy out there. How do you turn around the prophecy? How do you reverse it?
Kill it.
What?
Kill it. Kill the person.
You can't. You can't reverse it. So now, one could, it makes sense to surmise that this would create a sense of paranoia. Here you are, Shaul. So now, instead of knowing, you know, like, I read the beginning of Bereshit, like, I always lament that Bereshit goes by so fast. You know, like, there's no time to talk about it. Because there's always, like, Simcha starts on a Wednesday, or, like, you know, this week it was on a Friday. Friday, Shabbos, boom, Noah. Bereshit is an unbelievable thing. And I sort of mentioned this, I alluded to it in my drasha. Here you are, you're Adam. You were born into the Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden. You were born into, like, the most perfect existence ever. And on the first day, you got kicked out. So now God says to you, okay, you've got 930 years to live. You got 1,000 years to live. Go make the best of it. And you know, that it will never, ever get as good as it was. It's all downhill from there. And no matter what happens, you know, we all live our lives with the hope of building towards something better. Even as you get older, so I'm going to be more successful, I'm looking toward retirement, I'm going to be active in the show, I'm going to be active with my children. Well, it's always looking to something better. Because you know, like, if life only gets worse, as soon as, and I see this sometimes, you know, with older people, it's very hard. As soon as they know, and they start to realize that it's only going to get worse from here, sometimes you start to see a strong decline after that. You know, as long as people think, oh, I'm going to get better, I can get better. They have the ability to strive to do better. But as soon as they say, it's not going to get any better. My heyday is behind me. I can't do what I used to do. It's almost an immediate decline. So now Shmuel says to Shaul, it's only going to get worse from here. You had it all. You could have achieved whatever you wanted. And now it's gone. Okay? And so how do you run a kingdom like that? And he says, well, what can I do to change that? There's nothing you can do. So how do you, you know, how is the kingdom supposed to function? How is the king supposed to function? How are you supposed to rule a people? How are you supposed to move forward? Build an economy? Fight wars? Right? And it's a very interesting thing. Because on the one hand, we do things for altruistic reasons. But on the other hand, you know, the motivation of the personal is a very, very important factor. We're going to see that again today. And it makes it very, very difficult. So who does God pick instead of Shmuel, instead of Shaul? David. We learned about the anointing of David. And what's so special about David? We don't really know. He's a young lad. At the point when we meet him and he's anointed, everybody basically overlooks him. He's a dreamer. He's a singer. He's a shepherd. They don't even call him to the party. When he finally shows up, you know, okay, there he goes. Okay. Chapter 17. Long chapter, wild chapter. You all know the story of David and Goliath, right? Everyone know the story? Does anybody not know the story of David and Goliath? We all basically know it. Goliath is big, David kills him with a sling shot. So why bother learning it? What? Next chapter. Right. Well, first of all, you want to know about the details. And also, it's very important in order to understand the story, to understand, to see what the author of the Navi is trying to convey to us. The text is very important, as we'll soon see. And understanding, you know, it's important to understand about leadership. A lot of why we study Navi is really to study about ourselves, to study about human nature, to learn from it, and to understand, you know, who we are. And we see that a lot here. Vayashlu plishtim et machanehem lamilchama. So the plishtim gathered their camps for war. Vayashlu shocho asher liYehuda, vayashlu vayachanu ben shocho uben azikab efes damim. All right, so I'll pass out the sheets because I have the big map on there, and that'll be very useful. So the Plishtim encamped in shocho, and they encamped between shocho and azeka in efes damim. Okay, so you see on your map on the front page, see where shocho is. In the right-hand side, towards towards the bottom third. See where it says Shocho? Yeah. Okay. And see where the Jews are. It says between Shocho and Azeka. Where is Azeka here? Azeka is a little bit to the northwest, west-northwest of there. Okay, so basically you see where it says Machane Plishtim. And then Machane Yisrael. Mm-hmm. And you can see, if you know how to read your Israeli maps, if you've ever gone on a tiyul, that dotted line represents a wadi. Okay? So the wadi is the is the valley in between. So they are both, they encamped on a mountainside, and we'll see, look at Pasuk Bet. Shaul ve'ish Yisrael ne'esfu ve'yachanu be'emek ha'ilah. And Shaul, the Jews, they gathered, and they encamped in Emek ha'ilah, ve'yarchu milchama b'krab fishtim. Ve'yarchu milchama means they set up their war. I mean, at first you set up. Everybody's got to, they camp on this side, they camp on that side, and they get ready to fight. Has anybody ever been to this place?
Mm-hmm.
You have? When were you last there?
4 years ago.
4 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, we went on, we had an Orthodox tour.
Uh-huh.
And he only took us to things.
Anybody know where this is now? Nowadays? Anybody know where it is nowadays? This is all in the what's it called? In the Shomron. All of this is beyond the green line. So it's very hard. You can't really get there nowadays unless you have a military escort. You know. But when I was in Israel, they took us on the you know, you see where Beit Shemesh is? Right to the north of the little place, see Beit Shemesh?
Mm-hmm.
So everybody knows where Beit Shemesh is. Beit Shemesh is right between Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So this is to the south, and we directly to the south of Beit Shemesh. And you basically take that road, this road basically south, and the road still exists from Beit Shemesh, and you hit this valley, and it's an unbelievable, when you see it, you really can see how the war was set up. As you can see, and you can actually, on a quiet day, you can hear from one mountain to the other. And, you know, you can really, it plays out in your mind. You see there's like a picture of it on the other side. Eddie recognize the picture, didn't it?
Huh.
Right? So Jews on one side, Christian on the other, valley in the middle. Pretty wild stuff. So they're all set up and ready to go. Okay? And that's how it was. Now, by the way, what was the political situation at the time? Anybody know? Who was the dominant political force in the area? No one? So the Navi told it what? Christian, correct. How dominant were they? They were so dominant that the police did not allow the Jews to have arms. They didn't allow them to have weapons. So you ask yourself, well, how did they fight wars? They just did it with their hands, with whatever, sticks and stones and arrows and whatever they could make. But all the metal workers, if you remember, the metallurgy was all done by the police. So it made for a little bit of a...
snake.
What?
With not much.
Right. Correct. You know, and that's when Saul finally beat him. But they didn't really... how much could they get? You know what I'm saying? So even though Saul is appointed the king of the Jewish people, you know, it's like sniping at the Philistines, sniping at the Philistines. So they had one battle, fine. They had another battle here, another battle there. But Saul never really establishes the Jewish dominance at the time. He's always plagued by the Philistines being stronger than he is. They flank him, they have the coast, they have the big cities, and it's a constant battle. Always constantly fighting, constantly fighting, constantly fighting. You know, in a sense, the Jewish people never really got their independence. So the Philistine, you know, Saul, he has established himself, so the Philistine said, okay, you know what? We're going to bring out the big guns. Once and for all, we're going to end this. We're going to take care of this guy. That's it. The Philistine gave her a pasuk gimel. Omdim el ha'har mizeh. Yisrael omdim el ha'har mizeh. V'agai b'nehem. Just like you saw in the picture. The Philistine on one mountain, the Jews on the other mountain, and the valley in the middle. So there's this guy named Goliath. His name is Goliath. His name is Goliath. So it's 6 1/3 amos. How big is an amos?
He said 2 feet.
You say 2 feet?
Yes.
So we say he's a foot and a half. Okay, so if he was a foot and a half, so how tall was he? A foot and a half times 6 1/3. Is between 9 and 10 feet. He's about between 9 and 10 feet tall. I mean, big guy. He ate his Wheaties. What? Yeah, I mean, you know. No, Moshe, that's a midrash. So Moshe was kind of a stand. I'm convinced Moshe was a short, you know, short guy. I'm perfectly good. Yeah, right, exactly. And he had a copper hat, b'shiryon kaskasim hu lavush, and he was wearing armor. What is kaskasim? How do they translate that?
Armor of mail.
Of mace. Right?
That's that...
that change.
Yeah.
Umiskal ha-shiryon chameset alafim skalim nechoshet. The weight of his nesh was 5,000 copper coins. Chameset alafim. So they say it was about 100 pounds. That's how much his armor weighed. Okay. Umitzchat nechoshet al-raglav. He had copper on his feet. The chidon nechoshet bank day five, and he had, you know, the shoulder pads, I guess. I mean, you know. The chetz chanito, kinur orgim, and the arrow of his spear was kinur orgim, something of the weavers. Coming out of here?
Weaver's beam.
It was a weaver's beam. It was very long. The lehevet chanito, sheish me'ot shkalim barzel, and the lehava, the lehevet, the, I guess, the handle?
The blade
of the spear
weighed 600 iron shekels.
Right. How do they translate them? The Sehachina, because we're going to get named back to that. The Sehachina.
The shield bearer.
The shield bearer. What does Tina mean? Tina is a very unusual word. So that he had a shield bearer. Meaning, see, I never really understood that. So he had some other guy holding up his shield. What would your shield do for you if you had to have somebody else hold it for you? You know, they used to have an arms there. What?
Isn't
protecting his knees.
Right. Protecting
his knees. Rabbi, when they shoot bows and arrows.
Yeah.
And the shield bearer, he was the one that's protecting him, like a, you know, the he has a spirit, you know, to he needed somebody to watch for the bows and, you know, the arrows.
Uh-huh.
So
one wonders why they didn't think of shooting bows and arrows at Goliath. I don't know, it just never entered their minds. You know, but I guess, and this is the way it had to be. It was like one-on-one. Yeah, he challenged him one-on-one. And so I'm like, you couldn't attack him. It would be like cheating to attack him the wrong way. So somebody's got to take him up. So he would gun up and call out to the Jewish people. Why did you come out to fight us? I'm the plishti. Again, he's like, he's challenging them. Who's going to take me on? Come on out. He said, no problem. Whoever can serve me, whoever, if you beat me, we'll be slaves to you. So it's like a grudge match. Right? Everything, all the marbles in one basket. Whoever, me against somebody else. I'll challenge anyone.
Who's he saying it to?
To the whole camp.
To the whole camp.
So the plishti said, "Ani cheirasti es ma'archot Yisrael hayom hazeh. I curse the Jewish battalions. Tenuri ish v'nil chamar yachad." And he's not saying this. He would come out every morning, right? And he would start screaming this. And we're going to see later on that David says, not only is he screaming this, he's cursing them out. I mean, he's screaming this in the most vile, filthy language.
First trash talk.
You know, but he's taunting them. And trash, you know, it's one thing to trash talk, but it's trash talk, and he's backing it up. It's a big guy, and they're all basically afraid of him. But Yishma Shaul v'chol Yisrael at Divrei HaPlishti Ha'ila. So Shaul and all of Israel heard this thing. Vayechatu, they trembled. Vayiru ma'or, and they were very afraid. Okay, so they were very afraid, they were already done. And once they're afraid, once they're trembling, the whole game is over. But David ben Ish Ephrati Hazeh, Mibet Lechem Yehuda, Ushmo Yishai. So David was son of an Ephrati, and his name was Yishai, but no Ushmo Nabani. He had eight.
That sounded really weird.
What?
The way the Ephrati was written.
The David?
You know that David's his son.
It's very interesting. We're going to see, well, wait, hold off on your question. You'll ask me an even stronger question in a minute. And he has eight sons. And Yishai got a little old at the time. Right? And these three of his sons went after Saul to fight. The same Shloshet Banav, Asher Hachu B'Melchama. The names of these three sons were Eliav HaBachor, Urishdeo Avinadav, Hashishi Shama. So it was Eliav, Avinadav, and Shama. They all went to fight in the war. David David is the youngest one, and the three older ones went after Shaul. David, to answer your question, I think maybe what the Navi is sort of setting it up as its own separate story.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even, I mean, we do know this information, but it's setting it up. I'm not really sure why.
I remember last time when we were having this thing, when Saul came to bless, to pick a king from the sons, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And David was not there.
He wasn't even, not only wasn't he there, he wasn't invited. He
wasn't invited, and then he got him up. This is the same thing. It's now bringing out that David was still considered the pariah from, because of, remember what
Well, he's very young.
Yeah, but remember what I said that, when I got you that letter, I mean that...
Oh, you have to show me that quote.
I don't know. You did it.
Eddie found me a midrash that said that David was a redhead different, and that they were all convinced, well, that he was from another wife, correct?
Yeah, well, they were convinced that from another father, because he had stopped having relations with his wife,
yeah,
and he was going to have he was going to marry his one of the servants,
yeah,
and she paid off, and she was like outcast, his wife was like outcast, so she paid the maidservant. Not, and then she...
Yeah, I remember you showed me this midrash.
Okay, and she changed...
So he's the pariah, he's like the outcast.
Yeah, and they did, you know...
But either he's the outcast for that reason, or he's the outcast because...
And it's
because he's young.
Yeah, but it still shows it, because he's introducing now as... You know, you see it...
No, but in this story, there are seven other sons. You know what I'm saying? There are three boys. The three oldest ones went to war, and that was... And David. David plays in... We'll see how he plays in the story.
At this point, he's king?
No.
Who?
Yeah.
David's king at this point? Well, they're certainly not calling him king.
We sort of alluded to this at the end of the last class when they anointed, when Shmuel anoints David. Nobody tells anybody. So here is, remember, we started with Saul. Saul's looking over his shoulder, wondering, is that the guy? Is that the guy? Is that the guy that's going to overthrow me? And David is one who's walking around with this amazing sense of A, responsibility, and B, guilt. That here he's loyal to a king who he knows he's going to replace. Or at least who Shmuel told him he's going to replace. And imagine walking around with that kind of baggage. You know? It's like the second string quarterback, right? You're supposed to be a team player. But in the back of your mind, you're always kind of hoping, oh, the quarterback went down. Oh, darn. You know? David is not like that. He really doesn't want it to happen. But let's see. We're going to see a bigger problem. Pasuk Tevach 15. V'David halach b'shav me'al Shaul l'ro'ed et Shaul aviv beit lachem. David would go and come from the Shaul to shepherd his father's sheep in Beit Lechem. How far away is Beit Lechem from this place? Anybody know? Beit Lechem to south of Beit Shemesh. Anybody know? You know your Israeli geography?
It's far.
How is it far?
10, 15 miles.
Very good, 30 kilometers. Right. Now, apparently, 30 kilometers is not a big deal. They just walk it just like that. You know, they'd be just like, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, for us, 30 kilometers, how far is 30 kilometers? 10, 15 miles. How far is work?
Walk to work. 11 miles.
There you go. You're there. You know, it's not, I mean, it's
not hard to drive, you know.
It's not far, it's like a day trip. Okay? So here we go. Vayigash ha-plishti. What? Vayigash ha-plishti ha-shkein v'ha-arev. So the plishti would get up in the morning and the night. So if you look at, I think Rashi says, ha-shkein v'ha-arev. Look at Tetzayin Rashi. See Rashi on Tetzayin? You guys have Rashi, I think? Amar Rabbi Zainu, the rabbi said in Sota, kidei levatlam mikriyashma. They're getting up in Kriyashma, and every morning and at night, and what does Goliath do? What does this idiot giant do? I lost my place. By Yishasev Arbaim Yom. 40 days he's cursing them out. Every day, in the morning and the night, it's day number 37, and you blah, 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 bleepy, bleepy, and loser, still haven't sent anybody out to meet me. Where have you been? You're all afraid. We're going to kill you. Now, it is very interesting to note that the police waited for 40 days. Now, you wonder, how long would they have waited? you know, what is this the moratorium?
Is somebody to make the first move? Is that what
yes.
you were sitting there waiting for?
No, they made the first move.
By sending him?
Yes. Okay. And every day we come and say, has anybody have the guts now? You would think like after day 32, kind of get the point that nobody's coming.
Yeah, but you know, this is the olden days. We're not like now, you know, in tanks. I mean, you're going up a hill, you know.
To send one guy out. What are the policemen waiting for?
Somebody's challenging.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but after a while you think, you know, okay, let's go.
To turn over, to raise the white flag.
Oh, to surrender.
Sure. Why not? I mean, I just want to
trying to wear them out.
At least, I mean, you think Goya actually wants to go and slaughter people?
Oh, yeah.
But
are you kidding?
Sure, but he waits for an excuse to kill them.
What excuse does he have to wait for? Why is this attack?
He's waiting for somebody to come out so he can humiliate them, knowing that people aren't going to surrender. So
yeah.
He's going on a rampage.
But why doesn't he go on a rampage before?
He gave his honor.
Rabbi, didn't we have before that show Son was able to knock up a whole
yeah.
thing? So they in mass, they were afraid to attack the Jews because in mass they might be, you know, lose a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
But if they just try to get one person, I mean, they know they can win because they've got the tank and he's got, you know, it's like going to fight against a tank.
Uh-huh.
So figuring eventually they're either going to give up.
See, what's the most amazing to me is, I mean, on the one hand, why not send five guys out and go shoot them?
You're worried about those arrows.
They had arrows. I mean, Yonatan had arrows. They clearly had arrows. You know, because the story they long. We all know the story.
He was wearing all those shekels worth of armor. What would it have done to him?
Well, because you can find the king in the armor.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe you can't.
You talk about shame.
So you talk. So instead of three guys, send 10 guys out. Quickly.
That's why
he's sitting there cursing you, and send 10 guys out. Or don't send guys out at all. Don't attack him. The crazy thing to me is that, like, this was the way war was fought. If they challenge you to a one-on-one, then you're not allowed to go 10-on-1. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it was kind of like it was in colonial times, you know. That's how they
the honor. See, but the funny thing is,
you know,
Yonatan didn't fight that way, remember?
Yeah.
Right when he climbs up and he's like, you know, cheated. Right, and probably the reason why he was so successful is because they're like, what are you doing? You're not allowed to do that. You know? You know? You ever see that, like you said, Revolutionary War? Like, there was there's a movie about it with the Mel Gibson movie.
Oh, Patriot.
Yeah. So, you know, he pretends that he's going to hang these guys, and all he has is these mannequins, you know, that they can't see, and, you know, he cheats, and they get really mad at him that he cheats. It's like it's a very dishonorable way of fighting. This whole thing of honor in war is just beyond me. But it's just very interesting that, why'd they wait for 40 days? Also, the number 40 should be interesting to you. What is the number 40?
The doc says that
yeah.
He reads the letters, says that just like with, they had to wait 40 days to get the strength to fight him, just like Moshe had to wait 40 days until they were ready to proceed to
him. Moshe waited 40 days?
Like he was up there for 40 days.
Right. What else do you know about 40 days?
The flood.
The flood.
Everyone knows about the flood.
What else do you know about 40 days? Anything else? I mean, anybody else? Anything else? Right? When a child is born, when a child is conceived, they say it's not a bar kayam until it's 40 days old. Right? So there's an idea of 40 being the idea of developing something. Like say when Moshe had to get the Torah, or the recreation of the world. All kinds of different things like that. 40 appears when there's some kind of turnabout. When there's some kind of recreation or regeneration in a sense.
This is like the recreation of Jewish people.
Well, it's the creation of somebody. Who is it the recreation of? Of David. He goes from starry-eyed singer to vicious warrior in a second.
How long was he hanging around the battlefield?
Oh, let's see. Okay. Pesach Yizayin. Mayama Yishai le David b'no. So he says this to David. Kach na le'achecha eifat ha'kali hazeh v'asharai lechem hazeh. He said, your brothers are up at the war. Take bring them. Kali was roasted barley. Has anybody ever had an oven roasted barley? Apparently it keeps very well and you can make stuff out of it. What? It's like oatmeal. I mean, like, it's like once it's ground it'll keep and then you can cook it whenever you want. Probably not very tasty. Go to the war. I mean, he's sending his son up to the front. Go to the front and bring it to your son.
Your brothers.
and a few brothers. There's Asheres Charite HaChalav Ha'ela. Take these cheese, these milks. Tavi L'Shar Ha'elef. Bring it to the officer. It is not only to take care of the boys, to take care of their officer. That Achecha Tizkod B'Shalom Bet Arubatam Tikach. And so make sure your brothers are okay, and take whatever they need. Bring them nails, bring them some laundry, bring some cigarettes, bring them to your brothers. V'Sha'ul V'Hema V'Chol Yish Yisrael Be'ed Neka'ala Yilchamim Yim HaPlishtim. So all these people were sitting there and fighting with the Plishtim. Now, what's your problem, David? Now ask me your question. Ask me a factual question. David, you there?
Yeah.
Yeah. The problem is the following. What did we learn about David in the last chapter? I mean, we don't remember from the last chapter, but we began learning about his periods of melancholy. Is that ringing a bell? That he would get depression. He would fall into depression. How did he get out of depression?
He played the harp.
Who played the harp?
David
played the harp. So all of a sudden, it's a little bit of a contradiction, because before we learned that David used to play the harp for him. And all of a sudden, he's coming up to the front to see his brothers. That's just a little unusual. I mean, we'll see that it even gets more unusual.
What fighting is going on now? I thought they weren't fighting.
They're mentally fighting.
They're encamped.
They're encamped. They're in fighting formation.
Oh, okay.
Nothing's going on.
Couldn't it be that's not in order?
What?
Could it be
not in order.
It's not in order. It's just...
That's easy to say. What?
There's an agitated thing.
Yeah. What could be not in order?
If it was the part about the playing the harp is out of order, he did it after...
It could be, just to refer to Saul's periods of depression later on.
And then come back to tell the story of David, because you have to bring him in.
This is an unbelievably detailed story, the story of David and Goliath. It's unusually detailed. By Yashkem David Laboker, David gets up in the morning, by Yitoz et Hatzon al HaShomer, and he gives a sheep to his Shomer, by Yishav Vayelech. And so isn't it interesting that the Navi gives you that little piece of information? Why do you think the Navi tells you about what he does with his sheep? I mean, to be brutally honest, who cares?
Passion is so even in the face of war.
Right. I would even say that. Think about it. We all know what his evening is going to be like. We know what his day is going to be like. But when you get up in the morning, right, and he's going to go see his brothers, so what does he do? He takes care of his chores. And he's got to take care of the sheep. And he takes care of the sheep, and then he's going to go bring the stuff.
Well, somebody has to take care of the sheep.
Right. No, but I'm saying, it's like, he's going through his mundane, humdrum, what were you doing on September 11th? Or the people that were involved, the firefighter that's involved. So what does he do? He gets up, he makes his coffee. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day that there's this crazy day, that this momentous, earth-shattering day. But in the morning, it's a day like every other day. And I think that the Navi is giving you this in order to show you this unbelievably sudden shift. Almost like it's like the rebirth of David. Like before, when he's anointed, but big whoop. He's a nobody. And he's going to turn from a nobody into, almost instantaneously, which is a little bit surprising. Yeah. What was he going for?
He wasn't going to fight.
He's a mailman.
He was taking care of whatever they needed.
Right.
To help Matt, give him a little encouragement.
He was a delivery boy.
He was a delivery boy. He was not there to give encouragement. He's the baby. They don't want to hear from him.
He's just there to drop off their...
That's right. Thank you very much. Go home. That's it.
So then the question is, you're going to get
fight. Of course. Exactly. That's exactly right. I think that's what Matt is going to get at. He is he's not even on their radar screen. Okay.
How old is he now?
Hard to know. I don't know. Anybody have any ideas? Is it anywhere in the scroll? Anybody see anything? It doesn't really. It's hard to know. I'll look it up. I'll see if I can find. By Hashem David, Baboke Pesachav 20. By Yitoshet Al Hatzon Al Hashemer, he takes care of the sheep. By Yishav By Yevak Hashetzi By Yishetzi goes By Yavo Hamad Allah The Hachayo Hayotzei Hamaracha The Heireu By Milchama. He comes to the Ma'agala, this encircled encampment. The Hachayah Hayotzei Al Ma'aracha, and the Hachayah, the warriors, the soldiers, going out into the encampment. The Heireyu Bamilchama. The Heireyu means, I think, they blew the shofar?
Shouting battle cries.
What's that?
Shouting battle cries.
Shouting battle cries. So basically, what do they do for 40 days?
To get ready.
They scream at each other. Ah! Ah! Yeah, and nothing happens. But Taaroch Yisrael with Plishtim Ma'aracha Likrat Ma'aracha. They're at the stalemate. Right? So maybe you're right. Maybe the Plishtim are also afraid.
Yeah, that's
You know, except this one guy, Goliath, who's not afraid of anything. He'll take on the whole world. But he tells David, so David takes off his stuff. Al-Yad Shomer HaKelim, he dumps it on the Shomer HaKelim. Meaning, he is a delivery boy, but he is like, he dumps his stuff with the Shomer HaKelim. And instead of going like the campment is in back, and he runs up to the front. Runs to find his brothers. And he's speaking with them. And so David is sitting there telling him what's going on, and this sheep guy, you sheared him, and the milk isn't so good, and whatever. And all of a sudden, Goliath comes out and starts screaming at them. Right, so they're screaming at him, they're all big and tough. You know, they're screaming at each other how tough they are. All of a sudden, Goliath comes out, and what do the Jews do? Run back to the camp. I'm not fighting today. Fighting over. I mean, it's scary. It's sad. A young Ish Yisrael, Haritem Ha'isha Oleh Hazeh, Ki Lecharizvik Yisrael Oleh. So, it's interesting who now the narrator turns to the Ish Yisrael, the Jewish man. Who's the Jewish man? The man on the street. Right? Some Jewish guy. It's not true. It doesn't know. Did you see this guy? Haya Ha'isha Sher Yakenu. So now they're just choosing with each other. Ya'ashrenu ha-melech osher gadol. The king's going to make him really rich. That bitoyo yitaynu, and he's going to give him his wife, his daughter for wife. That beit aviv ya'aseh chafshi b'Yisrael. And he's going to, his family house is going to be free. You know, they're going to have to be very important people. Vayomer David el ha'anashim ha'omdim imo le'imor. So David said to the people standing there, ma ye'aseh la'ish esher yakeh ha'plisti halaz? What's going to happen to the person who wins, who kills this guy? Who is this? Plisti ha'arel. If you had to translate plisti ha'arel into modern terms, how would you translate it? The arel, this uncircumcised. If you had to translate it into modern terms, how would you translate it?
Alien.
What?
An alien.
What?
Animal.
Yeah, it's a very derogatory term. It's a very pejorative term. You know, who is this? Not an animal. I would use a curse word. You know what I'm saying? But it's interesting to note the soldiers refer to him, and how does David refer to him? Right. So, what do the soldiers call him? Ha'ra'item ha'ish ha'oleh hazeh. This man. And what does David call him?
Slimebag.
That's scumball. You know, but it's interesting to note, and it's problematic. What does David ask them? David says, what did you say that he's going to get? There's a problem with that. What's the problem with that?
What's the reward?
Right, David asks, what is the reward? Meaning, ostensibly, in a simple explanation, what does David want? His wheels are turning, right? What is he thinking?
There's a reward in it. Now he all of a sudden wakes up and says,
Why is he interested, though? What does he care if there's a reward?
He's a katan, and maybe he wants to advance his cause.
No, he's got the blessing from God.
So here's a question, though. So, you mean the reason... His wheels are turning. I think I can take him. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's nuts, but he thinks he could take it.
Well,
let's all acknowledge he's nuts.
He's been anointed by God to be king, so he knows he's not going to get that. If God says that you're going to be the new king, you're going to take the place of.
Are you saying that if he threw himself off a bridge, he would not die?
We're not talking about a bridge. We're talking now, in a sense, of war. I don't think he's going to lose.
I don't know.
What is the king's responsibility in war?
But the language is parallel.
What is Saul's responsibility here?
His job is to take on Goliath.
Correct. Saul's job is to fight the fight.
His job is to stand there as a king of Israel appointed by God. And if he truly believes that God...
One second. What about the king? We don't know what David does with this thing that he was anointed. We don't know what he does with it. Do you know what I'm saying? He filed it away. The things that we learn about him later on, he's so loyal to the king. You know, he fights for show. He serves at the pleasure of the king of Israel. And he's very happy to do that. And we never once see any lack of loyalty. Even when Saul is dead, David mourns him. And they fought with one another for years.
He never really wanted a destiny.
He never wanted it. One gets a sense that he never... So it's not about...
But he sees responsibility.
So then you're stuck with the problem in this process. You're stuck with this problem. Great. You're stuck with this problem. What's the problem?
Why does
it
care about reward?
Right.
If it's a responsibility, he does it no matter what the reward.
Right.
But the thing is that you have David, who you know, he's a good
person. Yeah, okay. I don't want to talk
about him. And then someone comes and anoints him, which probably doesn't mean that much to him, or he doesn't...
No, is that someone?
Yeah, okay.
Right. Shmuel comes.
But I don't think it registered. And if it did, you know, it still didn't have any effect on his life because he's still bringing oats to his older brothers.
Correct.
So, you know...
His life does not change in any meaningful way.
He's got a feeling, you know, somewhat inept or, you know, he has three brothers, they're off at war.
He's a kid, he's number seven. You know what happened to the number seven kid in the family?
Period.
Number one, what happened to the number one in the family?
Gets the inheritance.
Gets the inheritance. Number two, three, and four? Go out and find a job. Maybe two gets part of the inheritance to help out. Three, maybe. By the time you're number four, it's like, you know, you're on your own. Go take care of yourself. Number seven, see ya. This is what it was. So, you know.
Really?
Yeah. So, the real question we're facing in this pasuk is, what in the world is David thinking? Why is he asking?
There's something else.
Hold on, I'll answer this question first. Why is David asking the question? What did he say? What is the reward? How much? What did the king promise?
In the previous passage in Chafei, it says that, you know, he'll free his father's family from royal service and business. Maybe he's asking, like, finally clicking in it, here's my opportunity that we're going to, you know, this is how I'm going to free from royal service, I'm going to be the king. So clicking, here's my chance.
But to get out of it?
He adds them together. Now two and two make sense to him.
I don't understand. That he would not have to be king?
No, that he would, but his father's going to be freed from the royal service because he would be a king.
I'm lost. So, do you think that David has designs on being the king right now?
I know, but he knows they're going to.
You know, just from what I read, it's impossible to know what goes on in his mind. But just from what I read, one gets the sense that it has no meaningful impact on him. He is who he is. You know, it's almost like, that's that, whatever happens, happens, but what's going on with you now?
Maybe it's like a smoke screen. He's showing that he's interested in the reward, but he's not really, because he's really thinking, I can do this. So let me show that I'm doing this, because...
Yeah.
For the Megillah again, you have the parallel in language.
Rabbah, David saw the Ravens bring that sandwich prophecy, he'd become king. He felt it would be easier for him to rise to power if he were the king's son-in-law. I don't know. Okay. Look at the Bible.
Just to look at parallel language before what Maya said, Asher, right? Out of the Megillah.
Well, Megillah is out of this.
Okay.
Yeah.
But again, it's the exact same phrase.
Yeah.
When
Ahasuerus.
Ahasuerus asks, what do I do for someone who I want to reward?
Okay.
You know, it's just, there's a parallel there somewhere.
All right. I don't deny that. Very good. Look at the Malbim. See the Malbim on the second side?
Yeah.
So the Malbim's right. Lama Sha'al David. See the Malbim second side? It's the third source. Lama Sha'al David Maya Hashem Ish. Why does he ask? Halo Kvashama Kol HaKuruz Sharmelech Ya'asvenu Ubito Yitah. He knows exactly what's going to happen. Hayitachen She'ish Chayel Kamohu Lo Rishkim Lalechet Ad Sheshama Shehamelech Yishalem Tcharel. Like, you think, like, he wasn't going to go, you know, until he finds out how much he's in for it? And he answers, "Rezesh shekatzav kamit pale." This is how it's written, that he's wondrous. Maya asher le'ish asher yakeh tafnisi alaz, hayitachen yikabel alav shechar acher shebamaaseh hazeh yashir chepa miYisrael. You think that he's going to really go for the reward? U'kvar dai lo shechar v'hoter im yizkeh la'asot kazot. It's enough for him to say the reward if he'll achieve this. Says, the heart of anyone who is zealous for God and his nation, מצד תבירת הקינה והנקמה לעמו ואלוהיו לא מצד השכר. Says it's not about the reward, it's about avenging God's honor. So he says the Rabbi, I don't think I must not have scanned the right part. The Rabbi says it's a rhetorical question.
That's what I was
getting. No,
that's the way you were asking.
Right. He says, who cares? He says, what did the king offer for the person who goes to Christ?
You can tell him his language afterwards.
He
talks about Goliath. There's this
catalyst. He talks about him, right.
It's like, who cares about the reward? Somebody just needs the defense of honor here.
Good. Then what's the problem? Then you're stuck with another problem.
Who's who you say that?
Well, aside from that, he's stuck with another problem.
He knows who he is, whether you say he bows.
The real problem is the king shouldn't be giving rewards. What should the king be doing?
Fighting.
Oh, yeah.
Eating.
Correct.
That's what I said.
What?
That's what I said.
Correct. You're absolutely correct. The king should be leading. I mean, anybody who's going to do it is going to do it for the right reason. And if you're in it for the reward, if you're just in it for a mercenary, there's no way you're going to win. Yeah, if it's all about the money, if it's all about the prestige and the honor, you're dead. So it's inappropriate, meaning in a way when the king says, you know what, I'm not going to do this. Anybody who has a guts to do this, I'll take care of you. What that really says is, I'm not leading. Look at the midrash on the top, the second midrash. V'haya ha'ish, see where it says chaf hei, under that cool picture of the kid holding up the head guy? Yeah. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rav Yochanan. Shlosha sa'alu kihogin, v'shnayim hashivam kihogin, l'achad hashivu shelo kihogin. Three people asked inappropriately, but they got good answers. Eilein, Eliezer Eved Avraham, v'shaul ben Kish, v'yiftach higiladi. So let's just focus on Shaul. Shaul ben Kish, what does Shaul ask inappropriately? Yisiv haya ha'ish asher ya'akenu, ya'ashrenu ha'melech osher gadol ve'pito yiten, etc. Right, he asked inappropriately. Yachol afilu elred o mamzer, meaning is he going to marry off? Let's say a slave came and killed Goliath. Would he have then married off his daughter to a slave? No. Hashivu kahogen v'nidam lo David. Ah, but he got lucky. Who shows up? David shows up. But I'm not so interested in the slave or who's going to marry his daughter. What I'm really interested in is that even the request to me seems inappropriate. Meaning, if the king isn't going to do it himself, don't have somebody else to do it. Don't start giving out bounty to somebody who's going to do it. Because what it means is, you're afraid to do it. You know, what do we know about Shaul? The one thing we know about him is, he's a head and shoulders above everybody else. So he's taller than everybody else, and he's afraid to do it. So who's going to go do it? Are you crazy? You know, if the king leads him into battle, if the king is suddenly inspired and says, we're going to kill him, let's go. Fine. But if the king sends the message, you know what? It's never going to happen. So, you know, anybody's got the guts to do this, I'll take care of you. What are the odds that someone's going to do it? You hear me? Good. Okay. Pasuk Chav Zayin. V'yam Elo Ha'am Kadavar Hazeh Le'mor Ko Yei Asher Le'ish Asher Yakenu. And this is what's going to happen to the person who kills him. Pasuk Chav Zayin. V'yishma Eliyav Achib HaGadol B'debro He'al Anashim. So Eliyav, his older brother, hears him talking. He's talking to these guys, and they're talking to him, and David's wondering. Now remember, David's the kid. He's saying, what was the reward? How much? How much did the king offer? Vayicharaf Eliyav b'David vayomer lamaze yaradata. What in the world? What are you doing here? V'amina tashta me'atachon ha'hena b'amidbar. She says, you're a shepherd. Who did you give your sheep to get here? Ani adati yedoncha ve'edro levavcha. I know what's wrong with you. Kileman ra'ot ha'milchama yaradata. I know why you came here, you little kid. Why'd you come here?
To watch the fight.
You wanted to watch the fight. Get out of here. Now, I wanted to add, I forgot to add on the last puzzle, last question. Is it possible that the reward is a motivation for David? And is it possible that that isn't so negative? And we would like to think that, oh, David is like an unbelievably altruistic person, and he would never have any ulterior motives. But let's be honest. you know, let's assume for the moment that he's hiding in the right place, that he knows he's doing it for the right reason. But in addition, you know, the added prestige of knowing that you're going to marry the king's daughter never hurts.
And besides that,
is that so bad?
Is that he's also son number 7? Remember?
Right.
You see, like, this is his bonus. It's like he does this for the right reasons. He'll succeed. He believes that in his heart.
Right.
And as a bonus for being the one to stand up and do it, he gets to get out of the shepherd business.
Correct.
He's no longer the little kid, like as we see here, the big brother saying, "Why are you coming to watch us fight? Go home."
Right.
You can't say that to him anymore.
Right. Meaning, what I'm trying to say is that I don't think it's such a stretch to say that in some way, you know, the promise of immediate wealth and prestige and honor for doing this is a motivation. Is that a shortcoming in David if we say that it is? You think so?
Well, I mean, it's like, it is a shortcoming, but it isn't. I mean, like, ultimately, like, we should all strive to, like, whatever.
Correct. That's right. I mean that's what I'm saying. Also, you have to remember he's young, and he's early in his development, his personal life. So it's such a terrible thing to say that when he's at a young age, money does mean something, and honor does mean something, and prestige does mean something. And in the back of his mind, you know, Shmuel has said, you know, well, you're going to be a great person. And he says, well, you know, like, maybe not to overcome him as a king, like the Rabbah says, but this is a step in the right direction. Okay. So his brother wants to kick him out. Pasuk of Dalit. Yomer David, me'ashimti ata, what did I do? Hello, Davaru. I just said something. I was just talking. וישלוב מישלוב אל מול אחר ויאמר כדבר הזה וישיבו העם דבר כדבר הראשון. So he turned away from him. ויאמר כדבר הזה. What did he say? He said, what does this mean? He said this thing. Oh, he asked his question again because nobody didn't get an answer. And they answered him. What the answer was? וישמעו הדברים אשר דיבר דוד ויגידו לפני שאול ויקחהו. So Shaul hears that David is talking. What's David saying? And they bring him before Shaul. So what's David saying?
I'm going to do it.
He's interested in
it. Yeah, and it sounds like a deal.
His mother is interested in the way David is speaking. That's how he catches the deal.
I think I could do that. I think I could take this guy. You know.
Everyone else is saying, oh, I want to do a war. I want to do a war. I'm sure a lot
of people, I don't think so.
I'm sure people are saying, oh, the war would be nice, but I'm never going to be able to kill this guy.
Right. I think they're all saying, I'm never going to beat this guy. There's no way.
He's talking about the reward. He's saying, he's talking dirt about this guy, even when the guy's out there.
So now, here's the question. Let's picture this. You have these, like, 30-year-old guys. Like, you know, they're all set up for war. 35-year-olds, 25-year-olds. All of a sudden comes a 17-year-old kid. Let's assume he's a nine or 17 years old. 16 years old. So how old he is? And he starts talking trash. Okay? If you were the king and you heard about, hey, there's a 17-year-old kid talking trash, what would you say?
He's just a kid.
What?
He's just a kid.
He's just a kid. So, and you called him before you. Why would you call him before you?
Quiet him down.
What?
To scare him. To discourage him. To...
Like, right, to call him and say, hey, kid.
Who do you think you are?
This isn't a joke. Now, you think you're not helping matters by talking trash when the people that are actually going to have to fight this fight, you know, are scared. And, you know, I surmise, and we're going to have to talk about this, that Shaul is not so enamored with David, and he calls him forward not to send him out, not to say, who are you, but calls him forward to kick him out. You know, shut up. Okay. Vayomer David el Shaul. So David says to Shaul, Al yipol leiv adam alav. The heart of no man's heart should fall for him, because of him. Avdecha yelech v'nilcham im haplishti hazeh. I'll go. Meaning, ostensibly, we don't have the whole conversation. But ostensibly, what Shaul did say to him is, hey kid, shut up. Go home. This isn't a joke. Now, if you're going to talk trash around all these people, it isn't helping. And David says, Al yipol leiv adam alav. What is David really saying?
No one else should die because of this.
No. Yipol leiv adam. What does that mean for the person's heart to fall?
shouldn't lose faith.
When your heart falls, what are you?
You're not dead.
You're afraid. So David says, no one should be afraid of this guy. But who's he saying it to?
To the king. He's saying it to the king because the king says to him, go home.
So what's he really saying to the king?
No one else has the heart to do this except for me.
Don't be such a wimp. He's insulting him.
He's insulting him. Big time. Now, the question is, are they alone? I don't think so. In front of all these people. So when you go in front of the king and you say, I don't see what you guys are all so scared of. If he's not so scary, I'll go. If you were the king, what would you say?
It's harder. Sure.
You want to have that king?
What?
Right, send him out to
No, you won't.
You don't want to send him out because then you're accepting the proposition.
Right.
However, he has a choice to send him out, but to send him out now because here's this little kid, this teenager, he's coming up to him. He's saying, you're kidding. I'll take it on for you.
Correct.
I'll finish this right now.
Correct.
And what's the king going to do if he executes them? These people are already at the bottom of the barrel right now. If he executes the one person that's talking up, what's he doing? He's like...
No, we're going to see that goes the other way. I think the other way. What's the easiest way of getting rid of this kid?
You want to go ahead and do it.
Have
do
fun.
It.
Go for it. And we're going to... We'll talk about that. We'll continue next week.
Reverse.
Okay. Well, reverse psychology. We'll see. It's a long paragraph. We'll continue next week.